This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Philadelphia is not proud of its football team, the Eagles. In the Philadelphia Inquirer today, the team was called the most pathetic creature there is in sports. After this losing season, the team is expected to say goodbye to its coach, Rich Kotite, and quarterback, Randall Cunningham. My guest, Mark Bowden, is the author of a new book about the Eagles called Bringing the Heat. He's a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer who covered sports for 3 years. But he doesn't think of himself as a conventional sports writer. He spent the 1992 season with the Eagles looking for the stories that didn't typically make it to the sports pages about the subculture of football. And he wanted to write the kind of literary book that's more associated with baseball and basketball than football. He says that most sports pages focus on players as performers, not as people.
I was really curious to know who these guys are, where they come from, and how they make it to the professional level, and then what happens to their lives when they achieve this sudden level of success, money, and celebrity at a very young age. I wanted to know how that affected them, how it affected their heads, how it affected their lives. So I set out to do that.
Football players are living out a lot of people's fantasy. The fantasy being that you've got a talent, you get recognized for it, and in return for that recognition, you get fame and you get money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how did the people you wrote about handle the fame and the money, those who had both?
I think that I think one of the fascinating aspects of professional sports is that it's the modern example of the fantasy of getting rich quick, which I think is really close to the core of American spirit, or of one of the things that excites all of us. And we get to watch what happens to these guys. Most of them, surprisingly, handle it really well, I thought. They're level-headed, and they invest their money, and they plan for the future. A lot of them don't handle it well at all, and it has an effect on them in a whole variety of ways. One of the things that happened that was surprising to me was the extent to which some these young players would become completely isolated from their families and from their communities. I'm thinking particularly of Ben Smith, who was a 1990 number one draft pick by the Eagles. And Ben grew up in southern Georgia in a very large extended family in very poor conditions. Ben told me that he actually had never slept on a bed until he was 13 or 14 years old. He was passed around from aunts and uncles. His parents had split up. He had a whole slew of stepbrothers and stepsisters and cousins and siblings and uncles and aunts. And when he made it into professional football and signed his, and got his million-dollar payday, I call it, what happened to Ben was he was cut off from his family and from his community, because everybody wanted something from him. There was such a tremendous disparity between where he had come from and the people who he knew then and what he had now, that it became impossible for him to bridge it. He built himself a house in a suburb over in New Jersey, and you would find him even in the off season living there by himself. His parents were feuding because his father felt like he'd given more money to his mother than he'd given to him. If he went home for a visit, he'd have old teammates and relatives coming up asking him for $500, asking him for money to pay off the mortgage of their house, bringing up old favors that they had done to him at one point. Ben told me that in many ways he was happier when he didn't have a penny to his name and he was playing college football and he had to bum money to go buy pizza because he just didn't have all these other issues weighing on him constantly. So I found that to be one of the surprising consequences of making it rich quick.
You have the expression DHM, dream house for mom.
Yeah.
And that one of the first things a lot of players do is buy that dream house for mom. And then what happens?
Well, actually, the first thing they do is they buy themselves a fast luxury car,
which unfortunately
large numbers of them die in. But the second thing they do, almost without exception, is build a house for their mom. And especially these guys who were raised by single mothers who were poor, often in housing projects, who worked two and three jobs to try and keep the family together and support the kids. When the son makes it to the NFL, it's his opportunity to give back something to his mother. And what I found really interesting was I'd visit these moms living in these small mansions that their sons had built for them, and they were miserable in them. They'd say, I don't need all this space. I don't know why Ben built me this house, you know, or I don't know why Antone bought me such a big house. You'd find them living in the kitchen and in the den in probably the same, roughly the same area of space that they had lived in prior to getting this showcase home, which prompted me to consider, and I actually believe that what the player is doing when he buys his mom the house is he's trying to grab on to this fantasy of upper middle class life that he never had. And he enshrines his mother in this house on the outskirts of whatever community he grew up in. And it's like capturing the high ground in a way. And the mother is not necessarily well suited for that. And as a result, I think, I found in many of these instances, they sort of pine for the son, because the house is really for the son. The house is really for the player.
So the mother has this wonderful house, but how often does she get to see her celebrity son?
Not that much, and particularly when the son meets the Mrs. NFL star. And there's also a lot of animosity then that develops frequently between the mom and the wife. I mean, for instance, if I'm 21, 22 years old and I want to spend $250,000 to build my mom a house, or $500,000 to build her a house and put her on a monthly stipend of $5,000 or so, well, that's fine. Until I get married and have a kid or something, and my wife is apt to say to me, does your mother really need, $5,000 a month? Or does she really need this addition on that already oversized house that she has? The family fortune from the mother's point of view is cut in half when the athlete marries, or even less than half. And very frequently, you'll find that there's real competition between the mother and the wife. The other part of that is that the wives tend to come from whole different socioeconomic backgrounds. The player maybe met his wife in college, and she maybe grew up in a upper middle class home. And so the player's mother, who is in a housing project and who has all the mindset and attitudes of a poor person who grew up in a poor black community, I mean, those, I think on both sides, there's a lot of suspicion and distrust and fear, which creates sometimes really difficult situations for the men to deal with.
My guest is Mark Bowden, author of the new book, Bringing the Heat. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Mark Bowden. His new book, Bringing the Heat, is about pro football and the Philadelphia Eagles. You wrote about Wes Hopkins, mm-hmm. and who's married to a woman named Erica, but was having an affair with another woman named Amy.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife, Erica, found out about it. And even all the times when he would tell her it was called off,
he would go back to her. In that sense, it's no different than any other story of a philandering husband and a long-suffering wife. But what makes this particularly interesting to me and unusual was that Wes's philandering was open. And Erica basically had to either put up with it or leave. And it's at that point, at the point where I'm writing about it in 1992, she had decided that she was going to put up with it. But she did have one pathetic request, and that was that he not bring his girlfriend to the football games. Because Erica was, for one thing, she was the president of the Association of Eagles Wives, and the football game was a big social event for Erica. She was there with all of her friends, and the idea of Wes's girlfriend being brought to the game, was humiliating for her. She discovered at the Denver Broncos game in 1990 that, Erica had, or rather Wes had brought his girlfriend to the game, and she actually stormed down and got in a fight with the woman, and a number of the other Eagles wives came to her assistance, and they all ended up getting hauled off by security and arrested. It made for a very sort of public show in the stands during that game, and it precipitated the breakup of Wes and Erica's marriage. But what I found interesting about it, other than the fact that it made for a good story, is this idea that a number of these young men have, that they are above the rules, the normal rules governing human behavior, so that they have every expectation that their wife is going to allow them to have girlfriends and to appear publicly with their girlfriends.
I know you're interested in how fame and money affects the lives of young men who play football, but what happens when their career ends and there's less fame and there's less money and there's injuries to contend with, too?
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know as much about that and didn't write about it that much in the book, although, of course, in the years that I spent covering the team and hanging around the players, I saw a number of players end their careers, and I got to know players who had stopped playing years ago. Some of them handle it really well. Some of them take the money that they've made, and they make that transition very smoothly, frankly, because most of these guys, again, are not big, big stars. Most of them you never heard of before. You know, all they are guys who made a lot of money doing something that they love to do and who have a chance maybe then to launch the rest of their life or their career. But I think for a substantial number of them, it all catches up to them when they stop playing football because, you know, a lot of them were big stars in college football, but they didn't get a college education. And a lot of them live that life of celebrity and status while they're a player, and it ends abruptly.
What did you see during your season with the Eagles that surprised you the most?
I'll tell you, one of the things that really surprised me a lot was the intellectual demands of the game. I mean, I had always watched football and admired the athletic ability, but I never really understood how incredibly scripted the game is and how sophisticated its tactics are. I mean, you have 11 players battling against 11 other players. And the coaches, who, as I've already said, spend their lives studying this game, learning it inside out, have every play of the game basically scripted beforehand. You know, for instance, the offensive coach knows that his guys are going to get the ball maybe 8 times over the course of a football game on average. And he has studied with the aid of computer breakdowns of the other team's tendencies what they're likely to do on first down plays, second down plays, third down plays. And if you watch the football game, often you'll see the coach on the sidelines. He's got a laminated sheet of paper or a clipboard. And what he has there are lists of all the first down plays that he intends to call in that game and in the order he intends to call them, all the second down plays, all the third down plays. And he's shopping on that list before every play for which one he wants to use. The players have, over the course of months and in some cases years, practiced these highly choreographed maneuvers. In slow motion, they'll walk through them on the field, then they'll run them again and again and again. And then they get out there on the field, and they've got to try to execute this play, which, as I said, for every single man is very carefully scripted. And then they've got 11 guys across them who are trying like hell to stop them. And so it makes for, I think, if you understand the level of complexity, a fascinating intellectual exercise once you understand the way the game is played.
I guess this is as good a time as any to confess that I don't follow football, which probably a lot of people figured out from my questions anyways. But I know, like, Sunday afternoons and when all the pregame shows come on, it always seems like, you know, there's just whole programs devoted to strategy sessions where, you know, things are played in slow motion and there's a guy there with a pointer, you know, showing how a play was executed and everything. So I always assumed everybody who's serious about the game is really in on all of this strategy.
Yeah. It's real popular now, although I think the most successful practitioner of the what they call the magic wand that they show you on TV is John Madden, who used to be a professional coach himself. But he's so successful with it because he's funny, and he doesn't take it all that seriously. He knows better, I think, than to try to lead the audience into the full arcane description of what was supposed to happen on a given play. And yet, on the same hand, I've seen him almost intuitively point out exactly where a play breaks down or why a play succeeds. I think he's far and away the best of the commentators. The kind of breakdowns that you see on TV, you know, are the most primitive analysis, really, of what's going on in the play, because they'll focus on maybe one or two players, which is all they really have time to do, and they're able to show what happened in one isolated part of the field. But I think you'd probably put the audience to sleep if you went into full detail.
You write for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and you've had many different beats in both news and sports.
Mm-hmm.
And you covered football, I guess, for what, 3 years?
3 seasons.
Yeah, so you're not a lifelong sports writer, and, you know, sports is not what drives you.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you get along with the players? Were you a different kind of animal to them?
I got along, I think, better with the players than mm-hmm. most of the sports writers did. I would confess to players right up, you know more about football than I do. You know, I'm asking you these questions because I want to learn. And that approach was really unique to them, because I think most sports reporters set themselves up as experts and as commentators and critics of the game. And my whole approach was different. I wanted, in the same way that I report any story, I wanted to learn as much as I could about these people and this career and this game that they play. And as a result, I think, you know, players were much more willing to talk to me. I would go up to them and say, how many brothers and sisters do you have? As opposed to, how come you dropped that ball in the third quarter on Sunday's game? And it wasn't a calculating thing on my part. I was really interested in them as people. And I think they warmed up to that. A lot of the players did. One of the reasons I was able to write this book, I think, is because of the approach I took.
Mark Bowden, he's the author of the new book, Bringing the Heat. This is Fresh Air.